And with that, let's get onto today's race. Again, we're talking with Mike Beck. He is a Republican candidate for District 1, House Seat A. That's the Idaho legislature. He's opposing the incumbent. That's Heather Scott. Heather, again, was invited several times starting a month or so ago to come in, and she is not here today. She's not didn't make the broadcast. So, Mike, it's just you. And again, thank you for coming in.
Well, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
We like to open these with just an open mic for 2 to 3 minutes, and you let people know basically a little bit about who you are and why you're running.
Well, thank you. You know, you mentioned forums, and we had our second one last night in Clark's Fork. First one was in Blanchard. We've got one tonight in Bonner's Ferry, and then, of course, you mentioned the one here in town with the Republican women. But I can tell you, these forums are quite an eye-opener as you go through them. You get asked a tremendous amount of interesting questions. A lot of times they're very divisive things, and it's quite difficult sometimes to articulate in a one-minute soundbite or one-and-a-half-minute soundbite where you stand. But just a little bit about me. I'm a fourth-generation Idahoan. Grew up here in Sandpoint, went to public schools here. Attended the University of Idaho, got my BS in forestry. One interesting thing most people don't know, but I worked my way through college as a smoke jumper with the U.S. Forest Service, so I had a chance to probably visit every wilderness area and national forest in Idaho and around the region. So anyway, I had a nice college education, I feel, at the university. I married Dee Morton, and we've been married for 47 years, and we have two children, Elisa and Justin, and three grandchildren, and, oh, I can't forget to mention our little dog, Morton. He's my real vote-getter, let me tell you. But anyway, I've spent over 40 years in the forest products industry. I'm also a commissioner for the District 1 on the Idaho Forest Products Commission, and so I spent most of my professional career, advocating for sound forest land management, for multiple use, and when we look at what's happening today in our discussions about national forests and forest use and that sort of thing. You know, we fought what they call the timber wars for years, I have, and I'm seeing some real progress these days in bringing all the stakeholders together is how we manage our public land. So that's a real, real good point as far as my career as a forester. I've served on some working groups with Idaho. In transportation. It was called Ready Fit. And what it is, it's a working group that dealt with intermodal transportation. And we were on that group. It was like Department of Commerce, Department of Agriculture, and a couple members from the community at large. And so, I've done a little bit of that. I've served on the Idaho Forest Products Commission. I've served on a number of committees with the school districts here in the county. I started my career actually when I was only 17, right out of high school. I worked up at Naples for Deep Creek Lumber Company. Now, these days, 17, you can't work in a sawmill, but that's where we started. Right out of college, I went back up to Naples and worked for Kokanee Cedar up there. So I've had part of my career has been in Boundary County, and the rest of it has been down here with Merritt Brothers Lumber and Tri-Pro Forest Products. And so I know the district very well, from the Canadian border clear to the Kootenai County line and a lot of areas further south as well. So I feel I've got the background, the experience, and the desire to represent the voters here in District 1. I'm a conservative. Now, a lot of my supporters might think I'm a little bit too conservative. Some might think I'm a little bit too moderate, but it's kind of like Goldilocks. You got to hit that sweet spot there somewhere if you're going to really represent your constituents. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at. So, fire away.
One follow-up question. So, why did you decide to run for legislature?
You know, that was actually the very first question I was asked when I announced about a year ago that I wanted to run for this seat. And, you know, I've seen, over the years, I've seen a lot of candidates come and go, a lot of politicians in place. I've worked for Phil Batt's campaign as his county coordinator. So I've been involved in the political arena for some time. But we see so many divisive issues right now. And I'm currently retired or semi-retired, so I have the opportunity to serve now in a higher capacity. And what I intend to do is bring a conservative and common sense approach and an effective representation back to this district. I think we need to focus on the things that unite us rather than the things that divide us. So that was kind of my motivation for getting in the race. And it's a crowded race in a lot of different areas, so the voters are going to have quite a choice, and I intend to offer that.
Well, the good news is there's lots of opportunities for people to get to know you and hear from you directly who you represent and what you want to do if elected. So the next question is, describe the top three or five issues you believe are most important, why you believe they are important, and your position on these issues.
Well, you know, one of those divisive issues we've seen here in our district has been levies and bonds for schools. And I think it's very, very important that we take a look at how we might provide real stable funding for our public schools. I think that's a real key issue. And I've been involved in public education issues now for quite some time. And this is one that has really, really put the strain on our rural schools in particular. You know, it's been probably 20 years ago, we lost a lot of our funding from federal forests when the timber sales dried up. And property owners here in the district, in the county, have had to kind of fill that gap for facilities. But there's other issues with funding on state lands as well. The endowment lands, most people don't realize that our state forests are there to generate income for our public schools primarily. There's some other institutions that also receive funding from that. So when we look at school funding and endowment funding, we have to see where that money goes, how it's divided up within the state. And when you research this, you find that there's about four school districts, I think, down in the Boise-Nampa area. They receive about $10 million a year from the endowment money that go back to the public schools. In our district, we receive, depending on year to year, but somewhere probably under $600,000. And yet, we have the land base that supports the endowment. We have the sawmills that create the product that generates the income for that. And so I'd like to see the school funding formula looked at. And they've been looking at this for quite some time. So anyway, that's one of my top priorities. Transportation, like I said, I was on a ReadyFit committee. It looked at intermodal transportation statewide. But quite a number of years back, I worked real hard to get Highway 2 rebuilt from Sandpoint to Priest River. In addition, the bridge was falling in there, Priest River, that goes across to the Dufour Road. There were holes in that bridge a little child could fall through, so I made a pitch to the transportation board, and we were able to secure funding to get that bridge replaced. So transportation has always been kind of my first love. You know, currently, we've got a one-lane highway between Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry from mudslides. And there's a lot of damage in the northern end of the county from weather damage that some of those roads may not be repaired. So we have to look at both county roads and our federal highway system, state highway system. So how we maintain those roads, that's going to be a real priority for me in the legislature. You know, those are probably the two most important items that I see down there, education and transportation. But natural resources, like I say, that's been my career. And, you know, how we handle our natural resources, our state forests, is really important to me. Now, we have a program that was created under the Farm Bill called the Good Neighbor Authority. And what that does, it allows the state to enter into contracts with the Federal Forest Service to do restoration, forestry work, sell timber. And those funds will go back into the system that can generate more projects to restore some of our national forests. They're in really tough shape from insects and disease. So I really support that Good Neighbor Authority. There's a project up at Priest Lake right now called Hannah Flats, and there's another one that's going to be up in Bonner's Ferry. Well, one of the things that is really important under this is that under that Good Neighbor Authority, those proceeds from the timber sales can now go back to not only generate more restoration work, they can also go back to help maintain our county roads that access these national forests. So that's a real plus for the counties. So anyway, natural resources, transportation, education obviously are my top priorities.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. Let's get into a few questions then. So the economy and job creation are issues that are of concern that are often identified by the region's residents. Do you think that those two things, the economy and job creation, are important issues for legislators to deal with? And if so, what actions would you advocate or support to improve the economy here?
Well, you know, Idaho is probably one of the fastest growing states in the nation right now. And we're seeing quite a gap in being able to fill skilled positions in our workforce. We're seeing new industries come into our area, particularly aircraft industry is one good example here in town. And so I'm a real supporter of what they call CTE, and that would be career technical education. And at one point here in the high school, we had a program where the kids would learn how to do all the trades to build a home. They'd sell the home, they'd use the money to build another one, and so forth. And so I think we need to really take a look at our education system here and bring back some of that technical training. We need to keep our children here in the district, and we need to be able to fill those jobs that are real critical to this community. So that would be something I'd really support. And I know the governor has supported a lot of this stuff in his initiative here this last year.
Mm-hmm. Here's a similar question on that topic. Many states are increasing the minimum wage, some to as much as $15 per hour. Idaho's minimum wage is the federal minimum, which I believe is $7.25 or thereabouts per hour. Do you think Idaho should increase its minimum wage?
Well, I've never been a big proponent of minimum wage. I think a good, strong economy and the competition for good jobs will raise those rates. A lot of times you look at that minimum wage and it gives an opportunity for that young adult to enter the workforce, and they're not going to be there very long. So, you know, I have mixed feelings about minimum wage. I know there's a lot of folks that think that's really important, but it's not meant to be a wage that's going to support a family. By any means, it's more of an entry level thing, but it's really more important that we give those folks the kind of training and education they need to get good high paying jobs. And when we talk about some of the trade jobs, we're looking at $20-some an hour. And these can be had by some young students just coming out of school for the most part, as long as they meet the age requirements to work in some of this heavy industry, for instance. That's an issue. But
okay, well, thank you. You mentioned how about education and the importance of education in our state. And in 2009, the state budget for education was drastically cut as the recession took hold. But over the years since then, it's slowly increased school funding. And do you favor or oppose, I think you already said this, but increasing funding for education? And if you support this increased funding, how should the state pay for it? You kind of mentioned the state lands and things like that, but you know, it becomes a real tactical job to figure out how to get the money to the schools.
Well, that's for sure. You know, we have a sales tax, for instance, that part of that goes to support the schools. Some of those dollars have been redirected in other areas. You know, I think a really growing economy will make a big difference. And as we make progress in tapping our natural resources, that'll make a big difference in funding schools. So I think we're on the right path. And you know, we always want to look for more opportunity to adequately fund those schools. And you know, there's a lot of ideas out there, but whatever we do, the burden should not just fall on one group. We need to make sure that all the stakeholders and folks in our district are treated fairly as far as taxation. I know property owners take the brunt of it for the most part, but we need to make sure that is a balanced approach to funding.
Mm. Okay. Let's talk about health care now. Pardon the long question here, but to give some context, the Affordable Care Act is now in place, and Idahoans actually signed up for that at one of the highest per capita rates in the country. One provision in the law permits states to expand Medicaid to cover an estimated 70,000 or 80,000 Idahoans who make too much to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to be eligible for subsidies on the state insurance exchange. Legislators have been talking about this for several years now. They still haven't agreed on a solution. What action, if any, do you support to cover the health care coverage gap for lower-income Idahoans?
Well, Chris, as you know, this problem does not just rest here in Idaho. This cost of medical insurance and medical care in general is a national issue. But here in Idaho, I think we have the opportunity to really cover that gap. And I don't know of anyone really that doesn't want to see good health care for all our citizens. One of the first questions I was asked when I ran was this question about the Medicaid gap. And one of the things I ask at that time is, why are these people in the gap? And obviously it's ability to pay for insurance. But why can't they pay for insurance? So the first thing I want to do is make sure folks have decent paying jobs so they can afford the kind of coverage that they need to protect themselves and their families. I think that's really important. You know, why are they there? Lack of education? Is it mental health problems? You know, there's a lot of different things that make those folks unable to do that. So I think you have to look at two things. You have to look at how do we get those folks out of the gap, and then how do we cover those folks that really need it, that we can't accommodate in some other fashion. And I think the state legislature this year had an opportunity to do that, and they weren't successful. And that kind of disappoints me. So one of the things that I will be working on is to make sure the state goes back, relooks at that gap and how we can cover it, and then be able to offer maybe low-cost insurance for other folks that can, It's a complicated issue. It's kind of hard to describe in just a few sound bites here. But it's one that I did spend some time down in Boise trying to understand it and learn how it worked. And I'm confident that we can really close that gap. And I look forward to going down there to Boise and working on some of these kinds of issues.
Follow-up on this one, there's a local fellow, actually, Luke Mayfield. He's started a group called Reclaim Idaho. And they're currently going around the state staging a campaign to have an initiative to put a question on the November ballot, actually, of whether people support expanding Medicaid. And would you favor that initiative or not?
Well, you know, I had a one-on-one with Luke, and that's where we kind of developed our ideas on how we might cover this gap. I know he has one solution, and that's to take the federal money to do it. And, you know, I don't discount that necessarily, but I think sometimes we just think we can put federal money on something and it solves the problem. So I want to look at it a little deeper. But as far as initiative goes, you know, that's one of our freedoms here, is to be able to go through the initiative process. And depending if it gets on the ballot and how it's voted, I'll certainly look at that and see how the constituents in my district and across the state view that. And, you know, I've talked to folks down there that aren't opposed to doing it necessarily, but there's a lot of pushback on it. So we'll just take a look at it and see how it progresses.
Okay, I got to follow up on this one again. So the question right now really is, should we have, if the initiative were to pass, it would put the question on the ballot. That's all. That's all that would happen. Then the voters would have the chance to vote on it. Would you favor support at least putting the question on the ballot?
Oh, I have no problem with that. No. I think that's fundamental.
Yeah. We're going to move on here too. Thank you for that. By the way, this is The Morning Show at 88.5 KRFY. And we're going to move on to public lands. And you've kind of mentioned a few things. But there's an active movement within Idaho promoting a transfer of federal lands to state. Do you favor or oppose this effort and why? And then after that, after you answer, we have a question from a listener about that.
Well, you know, this is one of those issues that's been very divisive. You know, quite a number of years ago, there was what they called the Sagebrush Rebellion, and similar concept about taking over federal lands. Quite frankly, I don't see that happening. I don't think there's enough support really to do it, and I don't think it can be accomplished legally. May or may not. But I think the more important thing is how those lands are managed rather than who owns them. And right now we're seeing some real progress in the federal government and the state really taking a hard effort, making a hard effort to manage those lands for the benefit of the citizens of Idaho. To me, that's what's important. Good access for recreation and good forest management are something I've always proposed, as particularly as a commissioner in the Forest Products Commission. So, you know, I know that's a real hot button issue, but it's not something I favor.
Okay. A similar question, one more follow-up on that one. There will be a ballot question on the primary ballot asking local residents whether they favor or oppose the proposed Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. What's your position on that? I bet that question came up in Clark Fork last night.
Oh, it was a hot one. And, you know, a lot of times these questions are, they're really hard to just say, yeah, I take an absolute firm stand on this, or I take an absolute stand against this. And in this process, you know, there was quite a lot of work put into it on both sides on what to do with that Scotchman Peak area. I've lived around here long enough to understand why people feel the way they do. There's areas along the west side that were previously logged that are now included. There's areas that people traditionally hunted in and stuff that are included in it. But then there's other areas that have been opened up for multiple use. So, you know, as that developed, it generated a lot of controversy. But like I said earlier, Chris, when I was a smoke jumper, I probably jumped in every wilderness area here in the state, and I understand the value of it. But what I think is really important right now is that the commissioners have put this on the ballot, and it really gives the citizens here in Bonner County a chance to voice their opinion. And at this point, it's a federal issue, and all I can say, just like the rest of us, we can make our opinions known at the ballot box, and I'll be guided by the results of that.
Well, this is kind of a follow-up question, and especially with your background in forestry, this is from a listener named Jean, and this is the question. Many states, including our neighbors Oregon and Washington, have established or started climate change adaptation plans to cope with effects that we're already seeing, such as impact on forest health, increased wildfires, stressed cold water fisheries, agricultural impacts, even potential effects on recreational providers such as ski resorts. Of course, this year we had immense amounts of snow. Idaho has not yet written a climate adaptation plan. Should Idaho be preparing a plan, and do you see yourself helping move that process forward? Big question.
Yes, that is a big question. And I, you know, obviously I believe in climate change. I think, you know, it's like believing in gravity, for crying out loud. Everybody, you know, it's well documented through history that the climate does change. Now, you might argue to what extent and what's the causality of climate change and what are the effects. But to understand climate change, you have to have some point to which it's changing. What's the ideal point of the climate? You know, is it something we saw back in the Ice Age, or is it something we saw back in the... So anyway, I don't get caught up in the hysteria of it, quite frankly. I want to look at the science and the facts behind it. And we are doing stuff about it in our industry, in forest products. We look at the effects of climate, whether it's man-caused or just a natural phenomena, and we look at how we manage our forests to accommodate that sort of thing, either from insect infestation or increased fire. I think we've seen a tremendous amount of increased fire over the last few years. So we are preparing for climate change, and you know, I hate to get in the argument that man is the only cause of it. So, you know, that's an argument I don't think any of us can win at this point, unfortunately.
But you would favor preparing for climate change?
Absolutely. Whether it's man caused or not, yeah. I think we owe it to our communities to make sure we prepare for it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think we'll probably see some of the effects of it as strong as some other areas of the country.
Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, this is 88.5 KRFY, the morning show with Chris and Susie. And this morning we're speaking with the candidate for District 1 Legislative House Seat A, Mike Beck. And Mike, we've been running you pretty hard here for about 25 minutes, so I think we should give Mike a little breather, take a musical break, and I'm going to come back with a few more questions.
That sounds good. How do you feel about that, Mike?
I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we have a song that you requested. We are kind of going through the song possibilities this morning, and this is a Johnny Cash song, I've Been Everywhere. And here we go. We'll be right back with more of our talk on Local Decision 2018 here on The Morning Show. This is Johnny Cash. I've been everywhere. And that was Johnny Cash. I've been everywhere. And we are back here live in the studios of 88.5 KRFY. This is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. And our guest today is Mike Beck. He's one of the Republican candidates for District 1 House Seat A. So we're back, Mike. Good to have you. And Chris?
We're kind of, you addressed the question on climate change that one of our listeners had sent in, actually. Here's another environmental question. A big chunk of your district includes Lake Ponderé, and one of the issues or concerns that goes back 20-some years is the proposed Rock Creek mine to be sited just up the Clark Fork River from the lake. Some locals fear the potential for pollution in the lake. What is your position on the Rock Creek mine?
Well, I have to refer back to my days in the Idaho National Guard. We were tasked by the governor to clean up mill waste up at on Boundary Creek and also down at the Jack Waite mine out of Wallace. So I understand the problems we can have with old mining claims and mining production. As far as the Rock Creek mine is concerned, I'd want to take a real hard look at the technology involved. I think we've come a long ways in how we extract our natural resources. So before I would come out against it necessarily, I'd want to know just what kind of mitigating factors there are involved in that project. But, you know, no way I would want that to pollute our Lake Ponderé.
Okay, well, and on that same sort of realm, there are a lot of those kind of issues because we have this beautiful place that we live. We have clean water in our lakes and rivers, and we want, you know, so those kind of questions will come up, how to maintain our environment and our lifestyle here. Another question on that same idea is there's a proposed smelter, a silicon smelter in Newport. And that is a big issue for people right now because it's just come up and it's new. How do you feel about that? Do you have a stand on that issue?
Well, as you know, that's in Washington, although it's right on the Idaho line. And obviously this has become a quite a topic. And, you know, I've worked in heavy industry all my career. And I'm well aware of the real complications and expense of dealing with environmental compliance. And so when I look at this, I want to make sure that it is thoroughly vetted. And, of course, we don't have a whole lot to say about it since it's in Washington, but the Washington Department of Ecology, I went to the meeting in Sandpoint here at the Panada Theater, and I listened to their response to that. And to this point, they hadn't really even received the application for a permit. But the one thing they did say is that this isn't maybe. It's they either in full compliance and they get the permit or they don't get the permit. Now, you might argue is the permitting process or the standard high enough? And I think that's a legitimate question. So I think we need to know more about that. You know, it started out that proposal was meant to maybe fill the gap if the newsprint plant went out. And so there was quite a concern in Ponderé County that they'd lose a lot of jobs. And so this was an opportunity to maybe fill that gap. Now, as it has evolved, they moved that site into right in the Newport vicinity. And I think that's got a lot of people really upset, and I don't blame them. But my position to this point is that, you know, if it's even half as bad as what the critics allege, I certainly wouldn't be for it.
Okay. Switching to another topic that's kind of a hot topic, and that's the question of gun control. And, of course, since the shooting that occurred in Parkland, Florida, this issue has really come up in a very large way on the national stage. How do you feel that school security should be handled, specifically as relates to the question of guns in schools? Should teachers be armed, or should there be resource officers, or what are your ideas in general on that?
Well, this is one of those topics that comes up at all the forums, quite frankly. And, you know, when I look at gun control and guns in general, I got to tell you, I'm a strong supporter of this, of the Second Amendment. I've gone through enhanced concealed carry, but I tell you, it's not something you take lightly. When you go through that kind of training, it's sobering, quite frankly. So we have to have a great deal of respect for guns, and I don't think a lot of people do at this point. So just from a general standpoint, I think we need to understand guns. But as many of you may know out there, when we were kids, we took our shotguns and rifles to school, put them in the gun rack in the back of the pickup, and went hunting afterwards. But we didn't have this problem back then. And I asked myself, what in the world is going on? Why is this happening? And so I think there's a lot of issues, Chris, that have influenced this. I think mental health issues. I think social media. And our background checks are obviously not working, as you saw in Parkland. You know, we had a student there that was well known to be able to commit violence like this, and it wasn't followed up on. And it's unfortunate that we have to harden schools, but I think we need to take a hard look at that, you know, how we manage the facility itself. I think resource officers are probably necessary. You know, every school district in Idaho actually has the opportunity to arm its staff if they so choose. But I certainly wouldn't favor that unless that person was extremely well qualified and vetted. And I know talking with a lot of the teachers, they don't want to see any guns in school, period. And I can understand that. But, you know, we get all hung up in talking about guns, but I think there's really bigger problems. Why in the world are our children killing each other and themselves? It's really sad. And I think as a society, we have to help our kids, but they have to. That's a problem that they're going to have to solve themselves somehow. And I wish I had the answer, because it is a tragic situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're probably got time for just a couple more questions. One that we wanted to ask is about affordable housing. It's an issue in Sandpoint right now, for sure. But I think it's an issue that's actually kind of being exacerbated almost nationally as the housing stock has dwindled, and yet economic forces are making it tough for builders to even build economical housing that can cover the gap. Is this something you think that the legislature should be even working on, our affordable housing solutions for Idaho communities?
Well, you know, this is a problem probably more concentrated right here in the Sandpoint area than it is in the district in general, although it's becoming more so. You know, we have a lot of more rural lands here, actually, that have the capacity to provide housing. And there's a lot of pushback on how we zone and allow those lands to be developed. So I think it's really important that we look at our land use regulations, our comprehensive plans, and our building codes, all the things that really add to the cost of housing. And the state can do that to a certain extent. I think that a lot of that burden falls on the counties and how they manage their land development issues within the county. You know, your personal property rights are really important in this aspect. So I think the legislature has a role. I'd certainly take a look at it and make sure that it doesn't, you know, what you might want, what your neighbor might want are two different things. So we have to be very careful when we start looking at how we do zoning and mm-hmm. comprehensive planning.
Yeah, it's always two sides to every question, even on that case. Here's a question that's been raised on Facebook about your candidacy in particular, is that some voters who aren't Republicans, Democrats, for instance, have been supporting your candidacy. What is your response to that?
Well, I'll tell you. When you've been here as long as I have, and you grow up with with the people in this area from childhood, 4-H together, that sort of thing. And like I told the folks down in Blanchard the other day, you know, some of those people turned out to be Democrats, for crying out loud, and some of them fairly liberal. But they're supporting me, and one of the reasons is because I think they believe in me. I know they do, and they trust me. And I'm going to listen to them. I might not always agree with them, but I'll certainly listen to them. And I might remind my friends out there, good Republicans that are quite conservative, that Ronald Reagan didn't get elected without Democratic support, and neither did Donald Trump. So, you know, to have that kind of support, that broad-based support, I actually am real thankful that I have those kind of folks behind me. And so it doesn't worry me. They can, if that's the best they've got, bring it on.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that answer. And, you know, we are running out of time. And you mentioned at the beginning that you want to focus on what unites us rather than what divides us. So with that thought in mind, why don't you give us a closing statement to support your candidacy and why a listener, what they need to know.
Well, like I say, you know, one of the reasons I got into this race is I see a lot of division within our community and across the nation, quite frankly. It's very disturbing. You know, I've been one of those folks in the private sector that's been able to get things done and work with a lot of different people. And a lot of times you don't ask whether Republican or Democrat or moderate or conservative. They're issues that really affect all of us, and they affect all of us equally. And so those are the issues I want to focus on. I mean, it doesn't do us any good to focus on those things that divide us. It doesn't bring solutions. And so I'm one of those people that believe in getting solutions and having effective representation down there in Boise. So I guess that's why I'm running. And I think that's why I'm getting such broad-based support on these issues. So I guess that's my closing.
Okay, well, Mike Beck, candidate for District 1, House Seat A in the Idaho Legislature, Republican. Thank you for coming in. I really appreciate it. And with that, that's going to conclude this particular interview. I do want to mention that we are going to have a series of morning shows each Wednesday now up until the election, which is the primary election is May 15th. Next week, we're going to be talking with the Senate Republicans for the District 1 Senate seat. Excuse me, the Republican candidates for the District 1 Senate seat. This is the seat that's being vacated by Sean Keel this year, and the three Republican candidates are Danielle Ahrens, Scott Herndon, and Jim Woodward. They've all been invited in, and I believe all three, Susie, have confirmed. They're going to be in. We'll run through real quick. On April 25th, we're going to have the Bonner County Assessor Republican candidates, Dennis Engelhart, Donna Gao, and Richard Miller in. On May 2nd, we're going to be talking with the Bonner County Commission District 3 Republican candidates, Carol Kunzman and Dan McDonald. And then finally, on May 9th, we're going to be talking with Bonner County Commission District 1 Republican candidates, Glenn Bailey, Stephen Bradshaw, and G. Bruce Hollett.
And these are just the contested races, so we're not having the Democratic side on. During the general election, we would host another local decision 2018 with those races.
At that time, we'll be coming back in and talking to candidates from that will be on the ballot in the general election.
And just remember, if you're listening now and you have a question for some of our guests during this local decision primary 2018 series of interviews, you can call us at 208-265-2992, or you can email a question to krfyradio@gmail.com. And with that, tomorrow morning on the morning show, Jack Peterson and Jim Healy, their guests will be Eric Ridgway. He'll be in to talk about a movie that the Sandpoint Men's Group is hosting, and also probably a little bit about the group. Anything else We've got a lot going on.
There's always a lot going on in this town. I wanted to actually mention that one of the classic rites of spring took place on Saturday. The first ospreys were spotted up at the Memorial Field Osprey Nest. Of course, there's a live webcam there, so you can tune in to that live webcam. It's at sandpointospreys.com and see that. And they're starting to build their nest, so hopefully we'll have another season watching the ospreys.
Oh, that's always fun. I've been watching a barn owl nesting box out of Decorah, Iowa. And there's three little owlets that the mother or whoever sits on, and then she'll come back with a little squirrel or chipmunk, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
There's webcams all over the country.
There are webcams all over the country.
But we have one right here in Sandpoint, thanks to
Sandpoint Online and the City of Sandpoint. Done that. And I throw out one other thing that's coming up that's going to be pretty interesting. On April 28th, we have a Sandpoint firefighter, Gwynley Tutor. He's going to attempt to make a world record running 100 miles in full firefighter gear. I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but Gwen is he's an endurance athlete, and he's run some 100-mile runs. He's never done it with all that heavy gear
on. And that's a lot of gear.
Yeah.
And just so you know, they're going to be I'm going to interview them on the 23rd at 8 o'clock in
the
morning.
23rd. Yeah.
They asked to come in, so we'll have an extra special morning interview that day.
And what Gwen is promoting is awareness of cancer prevention. He's really promoting a plant-based diet because that has been shown to help prevent cancer, but that's the cause that he's doing this 100-mile run. We're talking about 100-mile nonstop. That means he's going to be running for more than 24 hours probably. And he's got a route that's going to start at the fire station and go down to Dover and back. And he's going to be doing laps for probably somewhere between 24 and 30 hours.
Folks could go out and cheer him on.
Yes. Yeah. People will be able to
And tune in at 8 o'clock on the 23rd. We're going to have them here in the studios. We can talk to them all about it. We can hear more about that. That's amazing, actually. Yeah. We're going to go out with a song this morning. I want to thank Mike Beck for coming in, Republican candidate for the primary here for District 1, Seat A.
Well, thank you for hosting this. I appreciate it.
All righty. And Chris, I hope you have a good day. We hope our listeners do. This is Neil Young, Heart of Gold. Have a good day.